You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 6th, 2019, and it's time to awaken the link in all of us.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And this week, that video game is The Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening. There's no subtitle, right? It's just Link's Awakening.
Link's Awakening.
This time it's 2019.
The Reawakening. I guess it should have been called Reawakening, right?
Man. That what a golden
what
opportunity.
What a missed opportunity.
Yeah. The Reawakening edition or whatever. They remade The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening for Nintendo Switch. Yep. I think this was if memory serves, this was a quick turnaround where they announced it at E3 and it's out now. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just this 2019 E3 and they released it a few weeks ago. And
it was much anticipated as well, right? Like, I think a lot of people list Link's Awakening as one of their foundational gaming experiences as children.
I never can tell because I missed out on the majority of the Game Boy stuff because I didn't have a Game Boy when I was a kid. And so all of my Game Boy stuff has been retroactive. So I never got a sense of whether it was just that it was a Zelda on the Game Boy, which was amazing, or if this really was... I was just super interested to play this game because I had never played it before and had only heard about it. And it was somewhat surprising that it even existed and it was surprising by what they did with the art style and all that stuff. It was just... It kind of came out of nowhere, which I also think hyped people up for it.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
We'll talk about the game in some depth. I think this will probably be one of those debriefs where I finish the game. George, you are partially in there, but may or may not continue on with it, but are far enough to give it a good, critical look.
A goose came into my neighborhood, kicked down the fucking door. I got really distracted.
Took my Switch, tried to keep throwing it in the water.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about pretty much the whole thing. And, I think a lot of it will be about just what this game is like in 2019 and where it sits. Because I think it is an interesting artifact in many ways. Where should we start with Link's Awakening for Nintendo Switch?
Well, I should say, I feel like I should establish where I'm at because I'm not very far. Like really, this is one of the most, I don't know if I should be embarrassed or what. it says Key Cavern. I was fighting a boss. I fought a boss that had like, it was a slime ball that had, would split into multiple eyes.
Yes.
It would like split and then it would get really thin in the middle and I couldn't figure out how to kill it.
Got it. Is that the one where you get the hook shot and you kind of have to pull it apart? Oh, no, never mind. That's the dashing one. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's the dashing one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how I'm supposed to do it.
Yeah, you're supposed to break the slime like a ticker or like a end of race finish line.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Metroid game because you unlock abilities.
Yeah.
And those abilities will allow you to progress in the world.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems that I'm having with the game, and it's emblematic in that section, is I'm often finding myself playing the game in short spurts. Like I will play on the train or I'll play on the bus.
Yeah.
And then I might not touch it for a while, especially if I'm jumping into other games. We talked last week about what Sayonara Wild Hearts and Untitled Goose Game, two games that had been distracting me while I simultaneously played this game.
Yeah.
And when I'm forgetting my progress or forgetting like what abilities I have access to, it's not really obvious that that's the correct answer. Like I have legitimately been stuck on that boss, and I did not know until now that dashing was the correct answer. Of course, that makes sense. Like,
right.
I know that the animation is like him charging forward with his sword or whatever, but
yeah.
I don't know. If you ask me, there's a lot of things in this game that are not intuitive. Like, that method of defeating the boss, for example, right? Mm-hmm. You get that ability. I'm pretty sure you get that ability in that dungeon, which I guess is really the true clue. Right? Like, I guess I'm a fucking idiot, all right, Scott? That's just the way that a normal Zelda game works. You get an ability, and you have to use that ability on the boss. But I don't know. I had forgotten for some reason. The ability is used to charge through, what would you call them? Like metal tents? I don't know what...
Like, they do look like little tents. I don't know. I have no clue what they are actually supposed to be, but they do look like little circus tents.
So even when I got that ability, like, what about those circus tents signifies charge your charging sword attack?
I don't know if there's like a bouncing noise if you poke it with your sword, because you know how you can like hold your sword out and poke it.
So that's the other thing. I've actually been playing this game largely without audio because I've been playing on public transportation.
Right.
There are elements in the game like fighting hidden doors in dungeons, right? You can place a bomb outside of walls, and if you hit them with your sword beforehand, you'll hear a certain noise, right? Like a ding or something, which will let you know, oh, you can blow this wall up, right?
Yeah.
If you're unaware, then like me, you'll just sort of spam bombs because I wasn't playing with audio, so I didn't get that audio cue. And
for the most part,
again,
especially in like the dungeons, less so maybe in the overworld, but especially in the dungeons, they are okay about marking things with like a crack in the wall.
Yeah.
But the, I mean, really, the crack in the wall is somewhat hard to see because of both the art style and just the color palette. So it's not always obvious, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the charging thing, like when I first unlocked the ability to charge, my first thought was, oh, I can use this to do long jumps, you know?
Which is true. You can.
Which is true. Yeah. And that's exactly what it did. So I set back. And then I think my problem was I started associating that maneuver with long jumps. Like, oh, this is the ability that lets me long jump and get through those weird metal tents or whatever. You know? When in actuality, there's, I guess, a variety of different applications you can use for that.
The other thing that I think might be... The other thing that surprised me about this game, because, again, I was going into this game having never played it, and my... Just from my cursory research, they're actually pretty faithful to how the game was on the Game Boy. Because I'm looking at the item list, and I'm looking at just kind of the bosses, and it seems like they're pretty faithful with just how the world worked, how the puzzles worked, and all that. The owl statues give you a lot of information.
I mean, that's true. But before you can use an owl statue, you have to find the beak so the owl can talk, right?
Yep.
And then where do you find the beak? Like, I don't know. That's often my first challenge in a dungeon, I guess, is like, find the beak so you can get answers from the owl.
Yeah.
The owl, I assume, is new in this game?
No, the owl was there in the...
Oh, really?
That was another learning where, this is where the Zelda owl stuff started.
Yeah,
you could just see some of that stuff. Like, it was cool as a, you know, amateur Zelda historian to see some of this stuff where it's like, oh, this is where some of these game tropes came from because it was the first time they had appeared.
Right. I mean, what's my problem, Scott? Am I just old? What is...
I mean, I guess I would argue that maybe you're old, but I think the game is also old. Like, I was struck by how much this game felt like A Link to the Past and just any other adventure game from the early 1990s in almost every way, in how the world was structured, in how the quest systems were, and some of those bosses were pretty tough. I mean, not Dark Souls status, but they did expect you to somewhat experiment with the different items you have. And even all the way up to the very last boss, there are no clues about the last boss. And you just have to test out your items until you figure out, oh, okay, this is what I need to use for this phase of the boss. And then something changes. And it was a surprising throwback to a way that, I don't know, just it doesn't feel like a lot of games are made this way anymore. So it was a surprise to me.
It's kind of this weird finicky thing, right? Like the bosses, for example, generally speaking, there's exactly one way to defeat each boss.
Yeah. You know?
It's not like, oh, if I position these bombs in a different way, or I can choose the method that I want to use to tackle this obstacle.
Yep. There is a weakness.
Yes. Every dungeon, every boss, like everything is very much, you just have to figure out the right answer and then do that correct answer.
Yeah.
And even the world, like the structure of the world is built with such a heavy hand because it's like from the outset, it is built as a game. Like, you know, there's no moment where you believe this is a real village where these people are like hanging out and eating bananas and stuff. Right. Like,
right.
Everything is structured in a very specific way. You encounter obstacles that you know for a fact that you will eventually find a way to overcome them or move them. You'll find. So, for example, early in the game, you'll encounter pits that you cannot jump over. Oh, and then you get the feather, which allows you to jump over them. But then you find pits where there are two of them in a row. Okay, so now you'll need the run ability so that you can then do a long jump over it. And you're encountering all of those things very, very early on. Mm-hmm. And they act as basically like fence posts or guideposts, right? Yeah. Like there's only a few different places to go. And so the actual movement that you are tracing across the map is very straightforward. Go up, do the dungeon, go down, do the dungeon, go right, do the dungeon, so on and so forth.
Yep.
It's weird to me, like I'm playing Outer Worlds right now, which is a game that is super rich and totally different, and I do not mean to judge it by those same standards, but just to explain that it can feel very strange having this immense amount of freedom and the sense that the game is respecting my ability to wield agency over how I accomplish my tasks in a very expansive way. Mm-hmm. And then play something like this where there's really just one solution and it's kind of a paint-by-numbers experience, you know?
I think it is even more surprising when you think about the context of Zelda games, where the first Zelda game was, even though it was a similar format, you could basically go anywhere at any time and there wasn't a lot of gates. You might hit a dead end. You know, you might get into a dungeon and realize you don't have the right item to progress, but there was many times where you could just stumble your way into a place where you just shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Link to the Past changed the formula to very much a here is a skill or an item. Now we're going to test you on that skill or item, and we're going to do it 8 times in a row, one for each skill, and then the game ends. And then you go back to Breath of the Wild, where it's if you want to just go fight the last boss 1 hour after you start playing the game, go for it.
I mean, you know? Wild. Like, I know that we talked about it and we said it when we were playing Breath of the Wild, but it is crazy how different that game is from its foundation. Like, it could not be any more different.
Yeah.
Like, besides like maybe art a little bit, like it is so patently different. Like, this is a corn maze and the other one is just straight up a massive field of corn, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's why when you start to think about the shape of the Zelda arc, it's this weird, it's this weird bell curve of highly open gameplay and fairly high skill level to this weird bell of Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, Ocarina, Majora, all through GameCube and Wii. And then all of a sudden you get to the Switch and then it loops back around to what it started with, which is, it's funny, Han and I have both kind of casually been replaying Breath of the Wild lately, and that game is not easy if you're underpowered and you just wander into a place where there's a bunch of guardians. Like, it pulls punches.
Scott, I know. We've discussed this. I know.
And so in a very similar way, that in the very first Zelda game, if you just wandered north instead of south, all of a sudden you're in trouble really fast. And that sort of stuff, those edges were shaved off of the entire middle saga of the Zelda franchise.
Yep.
There is so much of a contrast that you see after playing that game. And one of my questions was, I mean, I ask this question of basically all video games now, but especially Zelda games. Has Breath of the Wild just ruined everything?
Yeah. I mean, legitimately,
not in a bad way, but like legitimately.
Well, there's not a time when I'm in an open world where I don't think about Breath of the Wild now.
Yeah,
you know? Like even like take Outer Wilds, which I was comparing very favorably to Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
When I'm outside, it feels like I'm in a cartoony, crafted universe.
Yeah.
Whereas Breath of the Wild accomplishes this magic of feeling crafted, but also feeling natural. You know? It is clearly artfully drawn. It's almost like a painted world.
Yep.
But it feels real and alive. Yep. That very few open world games have ever accomplished.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I think in a very real way, yes, for sure. I think it goes a lot back to the ability for me to, I guess, kind of like have a plan B, right? So just as an example, there's a set of tasks that you have to take in order to progress the game. Mm-hmm. And it requires you to, I believe, you take a woman's like little Bowser dog, not Bowser mm-hmm. dog. What is the chomp?
Chain chomp dog.
Do some stuff. You have to play a mini game, like a claw mini game, where you mm-hmm. get a Yoshi toy.
Yep.
And then you have to take that Yoshi toy to a lady who has a baby. And then she gives you a ribbon. And then you need to go back to the house to give the ribbon to a chain chomp in exchange for a can of dog food to then give to a guy who lives in a hut by the beach to exchange the dog food for bananas, which you then give to a monkey who will open the door to a castle. Right, that is a fucking elaborate, convoluted set of steps. Mm-hmm. Now, I had taken a break halfway through,
there's your first problem.
Fucking yeah, huge mistake. I knew I needed bananas because it's a monkey, and of course, you need bananas, right?
Classic monkey move.
Listen, I made Diddy Kong. I know banana them and bananas. They're ape for that shit, right? So, I knew I needed bananas. It's hard to miss the guy in a banana hut because there's literally bananas everywhere and like the right. hut looks like bananas and whatnot.
And if you ask him if he has a banana and he says no, you're like, you're just lying. You're just lying.
Yeah, you're clearly lying. Well, it's weird because you talk to the guy and the guy says something like, I'm just crazy for canned goods or whatever. It's not like specific. Yeah. He's not like, man, I love dog food. I really hope I can get dog food. Like that. It's not entirely clear what type of canned good you need to give him, right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm racking my brain, where the fuck do I get canned food from, you know? And like I had forgotten I'd had a ribbon in the first place, so I talked to the lady and she was like, my dog sure loves ribbons, but like I don't know. It's really difficult for me to connect all of those steps in my mind of going, well, of course this chain chomp eats dog food and that dog food comes in a can and I have to talk to the dog itself, not the dog's owner. I have to talk to the dog itself to get that can of dog food to then give to that guy. You cannot progress until you take those steps in that right order, right?
Right.
So that was very frustrating to me.
I don't know why, George. Jeez.
But then you look at something like, and again, I apologize because I don't mean to compare these vastly different games to one another all the time, but because you brought it up, Breath of the Wild, right?
Yeah.
When you go into a dungeon, you have to solve an answer by like, oh, I need to move all of these complex things to activate a pad. Or you could fucking bust out your kite, blow yourself up, shoot yourself halfway across the room, magnetize some shit, and break the puzzle. And that's a totally legitimate and okay reason to solve that puzzle, you know?
Yep.
If you solve a puzzle by laying 7 swords to connect electricity grids together, that's okay. And the game's totally okay with you doing that, right? It's very hard for me to come back to a game like this where there's only one way of doing it, and there's multiple chains in that step. And if you haven't figured it out or you don't get it, well, then just go look it up because that's what you have to do. And that's what I've done in this case. And that's what I did as a kid. And it's weird to have to relive what feels like a very like forceful way of moving me through an experience.
It's just highly linear. I mean, you go step by step by step. And hilariously, since you're on this right now, this chain continues throughout almost the whole game.
The canned food banana chain?
Yeah, exactly. It keeps on going and going and going to a point where it eventually becomes optional, which I actually thought was somewhat interesting. I need to look this up, but my inventory, my item inventory is not full. Like, there are blanks in my inventory, so there's clearly items that I haven't found or don't have access right. to.
Like magical items and stuff.
And the end of this chain results in you getting a boomerang, but you don't need the boomerang to finish the game.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
So at a certain point, this becomes opt-in, even though it continues its... Like, basically, it forces you through some of the mechanic just to have it, and then if you want to keep going... It continues in an increasingly ridiculous way and then ultimately ends up in an item.
Is it a puzzle or are you meant to just grok it right away and go do the task? Because I wonder legitimately if I would have figured it out by just playing through it in one session or...
I mean, I think it helps because if you're talking to every NPC that you encounter, this game is pretty simplistic in that they really only have like one or two dialogue options right. when you talk to them, and there's only, you know, two dozen or so NPCs in the game, so eventually things just, you can brute force it pretty easily too, but I think it does reward a sustained playthrough because you'll talk to someone and then 30 minutes later you'll realize, oh, I was just talking to that person who wants a bow, I'm across the map, but I can easily get back there in 5 minutes and I'll just go do that thing, which is how I handled it. And if right. you're taking big breaks, it's much easier to forget that 2 hours
guy
ago
I wanted a bow.
Yeah, I wanted that, because it's not like there is, I don't think there's a quest log per se.
No, so. I mean, you literally have to go into your conversation history.
Oh, right. There is somewhat of... Okay. I actually thought that was somewhat intriguing, a way, because quest logs are great, and I love them for like a quality of life, but there is a certain hardcore sensibility to just not having a quest log, and I thought that was a good way of...
Read the book. Read the book, then.
Or if you're in like Dark Souls, just fucking read item descriptions, noob. Like, of course, I guess, you need to know how to do this.
Yeah, I mean, fair point. For sure. I think that's a totally fair criticism of Dark Souls. But
I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying it's a stylistic choice, and this game tries to have it both ways by not having an explicit quest log like you would in a modern game, but giving you a way to just simulate memory by thinking about things people have told you.
But I mean, a lot of what they tell you is total malarkey. And like, I don't know, I guess if I had brought up the history of the conversation with that lady, I don't even know if she's in the history logs, though, to be honest. I'd have to take a look. But on top of that, though, there's also the telephone system, which is basically the game's way of, I don't know, I guess being like a hint?
Guide or something? It's the hint. I mean, this game feels very much like an adventure game. And to the point where there's ridiculous interactions with strange, wacky objects. I mean, this feels somewhat like a Monkey Island game, you know?
Right. But I don't think that the hint system is especially helpful all that often. Like, either it's too obvious or it's kind of vague, you know? Like, the situation with the bananas. When I was in that particular place in that chain, the help tip from whoever, I don't know, fucking Ness's dad, I guess, is on the other line.
Every time I went in there, I thought about Earthbound.
What a great game, Earthbound.
What a game.
The tip was like, find a ribbon. I already had the ribbon, so it's like, okay, well, you're not helping me move along here, you know? So.
Yeah, I found myself using the telephone booth quite a bit just to... And part of it was, oh, I haven't played this game for a day or two. I need to know where to go.
I just feel like that's a bad sign, you know? Like, I don't know. It feels like in this day and age, right? If we were to have a game that was not built on the backbones of a game that was much, much older and was basically recreating it, like if this was a brand new game from scratch, I think a lot of people would criticize both the owls and the telephone for being crutches for bad game design. You know, like if it's not intuitive, it's not clear in your UI what the next steps are that you have to take. Yeah. Why should you have to call a helpline? Like, what is calling a helpline other than like a soft way of Googling it? You know,
in-game Googling.
I mean, fuck it, dude. It would have been way easier if they had just opened up a browser and let me Google it.
Link his. Oh, you've acquired the magical tablet.
Yeah, exactly.
Da-na-na-na.
The Sheikah slate.
Yeah, the Sheikah Slate now connected to, well, this was the mid to early 90s, so Link would be connecting to America Online on his Sheikah Slate.
That's
but
true.
Same yeah. concept.
Yep.
Speaking of the UI, did you have any thoughts or criticisms of how the game was presented or how the map structure was laid out? Any like thoughts there?
Well, I mean, the world map is fucking useless. I think we can all agree because there's, I mean, right? Like there are large parts, especially early on when you don't have all the tools to progress. Like at one point I knew I needed to get to the swamp. I don't fucking know how to get there. Like the map is not a helpful guiding tool to get you from location to location in the world map.
Really? You didn't think so?
No, I didn't think so.
How
am I supposed to know? It doesn't have like all the, I guess that's some of the like the turns and stuff, but I don't know. It didn't really feel especially useful to me.
Huh. It didn't rub me the wrong way because you can zoom into it. You can lay markers. I think the thing that they stole from Breath of the Wild is, you know, laying markers on the map that
yep,
I found
yep,
fairly
which
helpful.
Which is always nice. Yeah, maybe I just didn't, I don't know, maybe I didn't give it enough time to like, lay markers. I'm not a laying markers kind of guy, Scott. Helping myself? That's much too much to ask of me. No, I mean, like, whatever. Honestly, you're not in the map all that often, and the game's not that complex. Like, what, it's a few minutes of troubleshooting to figure out where I'm going next? Really?
Well, the map isn't all that big. You start to remember that this was a Game Boy game at a certain point, because you realize that even though they do a good job making the world feel segmented, the
right.
map itself is not actually that large. You know, you go to another region after two screens.
I mean, my issue was always that there were sections of the world that were locked off with some kind of barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might see a building, and I know, okay, well, I can go around that building, but you don't quite realize, oh, you can go up those stairs, but you can't come back down the other way because it's like a drop-off, something like that,
yes.
right? Like, there's
yeah,
a
there's a lot of one-way exits.
Yeah, like one-way exits where on the map, it looks as though you could progress because it's not in a flat, two-dimensional mm-hmm. visualization. It's not quite clear that there are those three dimensions that Link, with his awful feather jump, can't get through, right? So my one complaint was there were a decent amount of times when I had to backtrack, especially when I was trying to figure out the whole banana thing and I was going everywhere around the map, where
yeah.
I didn't find the map especially helpful for identifying the exact route to take
mm-hmm.
to most efficiently get from one direction to another. Again, not a deal breaker or anything by any means, but just something that I didn't think was especially satisfying. The mapping and swapping between items between those two, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not sure there's like a great solution there for this particular aesthetic. What I want is a experience where it doesn't matter what I have equipped. I can solve anything with whatever combination of things that
yeah.
I have. That's
yeah.
not really the case. So it feels a little bit manual to go in and then swap those. And then on top of that, in terms of UI, there are like a couple of things that are a little bit hidden. Like it's not super intuitive to find that history dialogue, for example. So
can you believe that? I mean, because this was originally a Game Boy game, so there were not as many buttons. So you
yep.
would have to swap way more often in the original game.
Yep, yep.
Man, that must have been a real pain in the butt.
Yeah. I mean, imagine having to play that shit again.
I was surprised that they didn't do more with the D-pad on the left side of the controller, because that isn't used at all. And you could have, even if you couldn't control the items with the D-pad, you could
hot swap.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would have been so nice.
So then you could have functionally have two active and four on standby, which
yep.
is effectively all you ever need. I mean,
or
you know,
even have it be like a radial menu, like pop
yeah.
up a radial menu.
Yeah,
we invented radial menus like 20 years ago.
Yeah, it is very devoted to how that game, but it's weird because if you're going to add a second slot, why not just add even more quality of life features? It's a strange place to draw the line.
Yep. Yeah.
I'll also just say just generally how this game looked. I liked it quite a bit.
100%. I think it looks great.
I mean,
I love the chibi aesthetic. I love
yeah.
the, it feels like it kind of feels like a plastic toy set, which I
yep.
think works. And to be honest, it works with all of my complaints. Like the very linear sort of boxy structure of the world, and yes. It works with this aesthetic quite a bit, because it feels like if I were a little kid playing with Zelda toys, I could make this world.
Yes, there is a certain gachapon sort of aesthetic to this, that it almost, to your point, it makes the confined spaces of the world feel natural to its environment.
Yep.
Versus just a technology limitation, which I'm sure it was back in the day. Whereas, this is a toy version of a Zelda game, and now the aesthetic backs that up.
Yep, totally.
Before this game came out, there was a bunch of people talking about the performance issues. Did you run into any of those when you were playing?
No, not at all. What were the performance issues?
People were criticizing the frame rate, which I definitely noticed and was irritated by, but it was nowhere near as bad as I had been led to believe.
Particular locations, I don't remember any crazy.
Part of this too is just like how much people care about frame rate. I mean, for me, I'm the type of person that would always rather have a consistent frame rate regardless of the frame rate. Yeah. And so when things dip and raise, it bothers me more. So
I'm playing right now, by the way. It looks pretty. Dude, the water looks great in this game.
I think the art style is great. You'll notice that especially when you're around the village, if there's a lot going on the screen, it will dip the frame rate down. If there's a lot of grass, if whatever. I mean, my hypothesis there was that Nintendo is a victim of its own polish, because if you were to tell me this, any other studio had created this game, I would say, oh, amazing. I can't believe, like, what a artistic and technical accomplishment. But the moment you see a little bit of slowdown in a Nintendo game, it automatically becomes notable, because it's Nintendo, and they are of a standard. And when they're not 100% to that standard, all of a sudden people start talking. But there was nothing that ever impacted the gameplay for me, which I was much more worried about going in.
Yeah, no, not really. I think the one minor issue I would have with the graphics and the visualizations is there are times when I bump into something and take damage, and it wasn't necessarily clear why.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just the angle of the game, because it's at this like cocked 45 degrees.
Yep.
And they do that
tilt shift thing around the edges where it gets blurrier.
Yeah, and there's some enemies that like jump around a lot or like suddenly appear, but I don't know. There were times where I just wasn't entirely clear where my hitbox was, but I don't know. That's just the reality of it.
What was the other thing about the aesthetic that I was going to talk about? Oh, it was just about the narrative aesthetic. Everything is in this world, it clearly becomes apparent that dreams are playing a big part in the story, and you know what, you're trying to wake up this thing called the Windfish, and all the enemies are like, don't wake up the Windfish or else everyone goes away, which I actually thought was kind of an interesting thing. They don't really do a huge amount with it, but yeah. I thought that was kind of cool to say, yeah, you might be defeating us and you might not agree with us, but think about the bigger story, and would you want to sacrifice everyone for this? Which I thought, I mean, it's a very kind of sci-fi cool thing. I didn't know that this game was like that.
I just want to eat the Windfish.
You see the Windfish at the end of the game.
Does it look delicious?
It looks like a Katamari character. It's just weird. Rainbow whale that like flies around in the
Sweet.
Air. But I mean, thinking about the dream aesthetic, I think it's cool that they used Mario characters in this game, because then you're automatically clued into the idea that, oh, this is not quite reality. Even in the context of The Legend of Zelda, this is not quite the reality of Legend of Zelda, because other realities are starting to bleed into this, which I thought was a super cool thing.
Dude, they should have thrown in more. Some Smash Brothers characters, get like Ken and Ryu in there.
I mean, especially with the remake, you could have gone much further with that, where in the early 90s, you didn't have as big of a stable to choose from, nor did you probably have the leeway to do that. But if Solid Snake would have showed up in this game, it would have been hilarious. God,
just chokes him out. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it would have been more interesting to have sections, like, have that appear. Like, the Chain Chomps, which I think are probably the most iconic Mario thing.
Well, and I don't know, have you gotten into any dungeons where Goombas appear?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. That was also hilarious.
Yeah. And it's weird because they appear, I think they first appear, maybe exclusively appear in the platforming, the 2D, where it like stops being 45 degrees and it's straight on.
Yeah.
And then it's like a platformer.
Yeah.
Which is super weird. But I think the Goombas is a great example because I like the idea of being surprised by that as you go into a dungeon, right? The Chain Chomps are revealed very early on. And I think maybe it would have been cooler to sort of gradually ease in or surprise you with some of those choices, but they're kind of thrown in there as one-offs and just obey the same rules as kind of everything else in the game, so they're not quite as effective as being like, whoa, what is this? Also, they were all kind of spoiled in trailers and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they put that stuff right up front in the first town. I mean, within the first 10 minutes, you see those things.
Yep.
It is cooler when you see enemies. There are... In other dungeons, there are Shy Guys, and there's just a few other Super Mario things floating around in the world. What else did you... Wait, so tell me again. You were on that boss where you had to use the boots, so that's like...
Yep.
That's like roughly... I think that's like roughly like halfway through or something.
Progress.
I'm trying to figure out if there's any cool things that...
I mean, were there cool bosses later on? Like, would you say that the game gets better as you go? I mean, I know certainly unlocking more abilities is a bit more freeing, but were there any elements that you felt like, oh, that was really cool, or that was the moment that really earned the game?
I think the dungeons get more complex.
Yeah.
At a certain point, there
certainly the dungeon I'm in now was way more complex.
Yeah, and at a certain point, there are dungeons that have multiple levels, and you have to purposely fall between levels and make your way around, and it just gets more complex. I started using the map much more aggressively to mark which hallways connect with each other and just keep track of all that stuff, which can be both annoying and fun depending on what you're coming to the game for. Like, if you're coming for just straight exploration, that stuff can be tedious, but if you're coming for, oh, I just want to really, I want a puzzle box and I want to go through this, then that stuff gets much more interesting the last couple dungeons. You know, there's 7 or 8 of them or whatever.
Yeah.
And that stuff seems more interesting. The end, especially the last boss, I thought was cool because there are multiple phases to it, and the game doesn't tell you anything about those phases. You just kind of have to see how it moves and then start making some educated guesses about what items it's weak to and just go from there, which again is somewhat of a rarity. And I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, the dungeons to me are that's the element of the game that I most regret not giving my full and undivided attention with like headphones on and stuff, because I think those are actually the more fun, puzzly things to work out.
Did you do any of the build your own dungeon stuff?
I noticed that was in there, and I did do one run through where I like laid blocks. It felt like an end game thing to add recurring play.
Yeah.
And so it felt like I didn't really have all of the pieces to really make like a cool dungeon. I love the idea. Do you know if it's shareable? I don't think you can share your dungeons with friends, right? Or
you can share them with a friend, George. Do you want to know how you can share them with a friend?
How do you do that?
You must load them onto an amiibo.
Are you serious? Really?
I'm dead serious.
It's all a dream.
Yeah, exactly. The Inside internet the mind itself is of just Samus. A dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird.
Yes, you can load your dungeons onto an amiibo and share them with your closest friends. I was
physically close, or you can mail them, I guess. Close.
Yeah, you can exactly drop your amiibo in the mailbox, and in a week you can get. I was disappointed because when I first heard about that and uncovered it in the game, I got excited and thought to myself, "Oh shit! Did they make Zelda Maker? Is this Zelda Maker
dude,
Red?"
Yeah.
And unfortunately, not even close. And so I just kind of pulled the ripcord and disengaged from it.
Yeah, I mean, you just lay blocks, and then the blocks are sort of randomized. I mean, the fun thing would be designing the puzzles, right? Yeah. Like hiding keys in locations and hidden walls and yep. like sequences of events where you have to like combine chains and stuff. Like that would be really neat, but alas.
If they could do the troll Mario levels, but in Zelda world, I mean, that would just open up a whole new level of,
yep. yeah.
of insanity for the game. But yeah, it was mostly, it had a lot of promise, but then once I dug into it a little bit, it was just more kind of frustrating than anything. The UI was kind of wonky. It was there are specific limits to it where you have to keep finding new tiles, which is yep. an inherent limit. So it didn't really yeah, inspire me to engage.
The tutorial is a little like weirdly presented.
Yeah, definitely. I should look up if that character, because that character showed up in Ocarina of Time. I wonder if really? That character first showed up in this game, which would explain something else about Zelda lore and the influence of this game.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Would you recommend this game or what?
I mean, I was thinking about
that. Do you think I should
finish it? I mean, if I'm being completely impartial, I don't think you're really missing anything that you haven't already seen. It's just more complexity. Basically, if you're interested in more complex scenarios, then keep playing. But you're not going to find something where, oh, all of a sudden in Dungeon 5, it becomes a different game. It's just not going to be that way. And it's just more of
I'm not going to find a gem in the, like, children's sandbox.
It's just going to be, you're just going to find more chewed up old, dump trucks or whatever. Like,
Dora the Explorer dolls and stuff.
Yeah, it's not going to be, you're not going to find cat poop. But you're not going to find, you're not going to find a priceless antique watch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was funny because I had just played through the first, hour or so of A Link to the Past on the virtual console thing that they released on Switch. And I thought it was a very cool and faithful feeling rendition of that era of video games.
Yeah.
And so that's my hedging recommendation, which is if you really did love those traditional 90s Zelda games, this is such a great version of it, but it's not going to convert people like
yep.
something like Breath of the Wild would. And so if you really want a Zelda game, this is it. But if you want an outstanding example of what the medium can do, this is for, this is for hobbyists, not for a mainstream audience.
This isn't for professionals like myself. Yeah. So, I mean, in all honesty, this is giving me the most trepidation about picking up the new Luigi's Mansion, because I have fond memories of the first Luigi's Mansion, but I'm also aware that that game doesn't age very well.
Yeah.
And I've heard good things about Luigi's Mansion. I've talked to some coworkers who are really enjoying it thus far, but I do have some concerns that it will be similar, where it will be constrained by having to be the sort of callback to the old Luigi's Mansion and exceedingly accessible, and sort of obeying all of the rules that were established by the first one, and not all that clever. So, I mean, those are my concerns about really trying any game that is like another really deep callback that from Nintendo that doesn't seem to be, patently different than some of their predecessors,
I'm glad that I didn't play Luigi's Mansion 2, because that means I just haven't been exposed to this formula very recently, so I can give it a little bit more of a pass. But if you, again, maybe this is a good example of, if you haven't played a Zelda game since A Link to the Past, this is a great one to play again, because it is a very similar formula to Ocarina or Skyward Sword or whatever.
Counterpoint, fuck it, play Breath of the Wild. What are you doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just a dangerous ethos, because then eventually you're just only playing Breath of the Wild and Peggle or whatever. I mean, if you
God, basically Peggle, that's a callback. I haven't thought about Peggle in a long time.
Well, I mean, there's a certain number of games where, like, for me, it's Breath of the Wild and Threes. Basically, I could play those games forever, and I have to stop myself from playing them to play other games.
That's true. Yeah.
Cool. I guess we'll leave it there for this week. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on by, bring your friends, leave us a review. Thanks a lot for that. Also, hey, it's like November. We have like goaty shit in like a month.
I was like, no joke, I was looking at the calendar and starting to work our way backwards. I mean, coming up, we're gonna do gamies, goaties, goatee leftovers 2019.
I can I just say right now, I'm not that excited for goaties. I think it has been, to be frank, a very weak year for video games thus far.
Well, we haven't played Death Stranding yet. Well,
I mean, even if Death Stranding is like fucking, I'm getting a Kojima X Guillermo tattoo on my back. Like, it's still only one game out of the year. You know what I mean? So,
I think this goaties might be an opportunity for us to just. I mean, I think the hottest contested goatee categories will be the ones that are the most non-traditional.
Yes. I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. I think it's a good year for gamies. I don't know if it's a great year for goatee.
Might be that's
good,
true.
But you know what? Every year is a good year for gamies. That's my logic.
Yeah, there's no bad gamies.
There's no bad gaming.
And even if it is bad, that just means it's good.
Exactly right.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're going to, that will be, I don't know, probably starting mid-ish December or so, we'll start to look back at the year and also look forward to 2020.
Yep.
The 2020 stuff will be interesting, too, because by this time next year, we could very easily own PlayStation 5s / Xbox Scarlets.
Yep, crazy.
Crazy, right? Like, it's a console year next year, so like, there's just a lot of interesting predictions/releases coming out.
Yeah, big releases. I would say if anyone's listening and has a recommendation for a game that's short that I could play this year that might be a GOTY contender, let me know. There's a couple on my list actually. I heard Eliza was good.
Mm.
You know,
there's
of indies. Like,
Outer Worlds is coming out there. Yep. I mean, there's just the
I still
the
year is somewhat Outer Wilds.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I just thought of a good goaties category. I'll file that away for later in the in the year.
Outer games.
Yeah. I think this year is certainly one where word of mouth is more important.
Yep.
So I double down on that request. If there's something that is being overlooked, I would be interested in taking a look myself.
For sure.
Cool. All right. We will we'll leave it there. And thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.